Chapter 5, Set Up for Monstering, a Fabricated Sequence. Living My Best Life, Criminally. This chapter and the next detail what knowledge is available to me in relation to the setup of a false criminal case against me. It sets out the truth of entirely private communications and consensual exchanges between two adults, which took place in 2015 to 2016. I would never have disclosed this detail unless compelled to do so. I'm compelled to do so in order to prevent criminal conduct by Emma Clark, and perhaps others, by perverting the course of justice, among other matters. Fabricated sequences from these private communications were produced to police in 22 to 23, along with false criminal allegations. True and accurate detail is set out below. The chapter details that a false impression of the nature of those accusations was then deliberately disseminated and shaped by or on behalf of a, quotes, judge, in mass media all over the world to ensure maximum impact and damage to me and to my family. This is corruption at work. The days and weeks immediately after my arrest on the 15th of February 2023 were really difficult. They were genuinely traumatic. I mean the sort of trauma that visits you with the death of a loved one. I mean that. I'm not exaggerating. That feeling of radical alteration to the way a whole family views the world and the structures around them. No proper sleeping. Sore faces from constant crying. The monsters had put a bomb in my family. In my home. I'm absolutely sure that was their intention. They knew that was the most effective way to hurt me. By hurting my family. By trying their best to alienate my family from me. From a family point of view, I'd done something wrong, really wrong. That wreaked havoc, as you can imagine. I'm sure that was their intention. But the personal stuff is our personal business. From a criminal point of view, I hadn't done anything wrong at all. I had been completely set up. And as you'll see, the setup had the groupthink's hallmark all over it. A tiny nugget of fact, inflated and blown up to monstering proportions. The monstering swings into action, just like with Susan O'Brien, but much, much worse. Susan O'Brien, QC, was the initially appointed chair of the SCAI before Lady Smith. Susan was undermined in an expert othering pincer movement by the groupthink. She was then brutally and publicly monstered by them, and by the Scottish Government. Susan resigned. I'll tell you about it later. The detail of what was alleged by Emma Clark, as put to me by the cops, began to be assessed against my documentary and other records, and it became clear that I can demonstrate she's lying. Never mind raising a reasonable doubt about what was put to me by the cops during the interview on the 15th of February 2023, I can prove that what was put to me didn't happen. The Procurator Fiscal knows that. The Crown knows that. Not because I've made any admissible statement, but because I know it'll have been leaked to them through friends and trusted colleagues. Also in the galaxy of litigation that's been commenced. I'll tell you about that later too. I didn't and still don't have copies of police statements or a proper accurate record of the interview under caution. That's because I haven't been prosecuted. I'm sure it's absolutely intentional. If I'd been prosecuted, I'd be entitled to see the case against me, to disclosure of the evidence, but I'm not entitled to that, so I haven't got it. I haven't seen Emma Clark's statements that she didn't cooperate during. I don't know exactly what her failure to cooperate means. And just to remind you, I'm a part-time judge, but I've been monstered in the media, and I'm just supposed to remain quiet and worried in this ludicrous, corrupt, Kafkaesque little world that I'm trapped in. And without the detail of what I'm accused of having done. That's still true at the time of narrating this audiobook in February 2024. So I'm in a permanent state of a kind of limbo. I'm pretty sure that's their intention, whoever they are. I can only know them by their works, per ea quae facta sunt. A united cause of some kind, a cosa nostra, but operating in broad daylight in Scotland. Clearly for the protection of some. Operating at the top of the legal system, and unaccountable to anyone, it seems. Emma Clark has been prepared for whatever reason to fabricate and put together, or allow others to put together, a series of WhatsApp messages and images, and alleged they were sent on 2 days, 9th and 10th of August 2016, and that she'd been bombarded out of the blue with unwelcome material. Emma Clark is a liar. These are the alleged sexual offences, the subject of the monstering. You'll see immediately that that has nothing to do with Lady Smith and the SCAI, but it provided the opportunity for Lady Smith and McKendry, the low-life media strategist, to strategically place child abuse inquiry, and sexual offences with other innuendo juxtaposed with my name and sent out to the world's mass media. Deplorable. In fact, McKendry even provided the source of the information for the Times journalist, Poppy Karonka. McKendry told her that I had been arrested in connection with possession of child sexual abuse images. That's wholly untrue, it's criminal behaviour, and it will be dealt with in due course. Emma Clark must have had plenty of material to choose from for her fabricated sequence. She and I had been messaging one another secretly, on and off between June 2015 and July 2016. We'd agreed that we would both delete the images and messages. I did. She obviously didn't and was now producing and complaining about them 7 to 8 years later. Isn't that strange? I wonder what other images she's kept for that sort of period of time. I mean, images of whom and for what purpose? Or, more accurately, of which lawyers and judges? It's very much in the public interest that someone as apparently dangerous as Emma Clark needs to be identified, called out and stopped. This is a matter of general public interest. I'm setting out some detail here which is merely incidental to the discussion in the public interest. You can't have a Sheriff Clark behaving like this, repeatedly, and with a number of lawyers and judges. The role of a Sheriff Clark involves dealing with extremely sensitive materials and issues, and with lawyers and judges. It goes without saying that exchanging explicit messages like that might be seen as inappropriate. This is an entirely personal matter. It's definitely not a criminal matter. Our relationship was consensual, private, secret, and in my mind, I had convinced myself was separate. In June 2015, Emma Clark was in a relationship with her then partner, a Sheriff Clark at Edinburgh Sheriff Court. She told me, quotes, "he bought me shoes," as an explanation of how they got together. I thought that was a curious comment at the time, but I came to understand what it meant, as you'll see. She had an affair with a solicitor during late 2015. She wanted him to leave his wife, but he wouldn't, so the relationship ended. She told me she had started her relationship with her now husband, Graham Clark, a criminal legal aid solicitor, in about early 2016. She told me she had known him for years. They had a mutual understanding that they might get together at some stage. He had a daughter from a previous relationship, and it was complicated because of that. She was messaging me and speaking to me during parts of these relationships and discussed these matters with me at length. I could give much more detail, like where she would meet each of them and when. She sent me sexually explicit images that she told me she also sent to Graham Clark and to the solicitor with whom she'd been having an affair in late 2015. I was a bit surprised by this. The cops put to me, as Emma Clark had apparently told them, that I had become attracted to her during 2016. That's a lie. It's a lie that seems to be anchored in the date that she changed her phone and phone number in early 2016. She sent me her phone number when she changed it in 2016. I can show it was Emma Clark who got back in contact with me at the end of 2015 and not the other way around. This was after she'd started her relationship with her now husband. She definitely changed her number after the 11th of February 2016. Why would she send me her new number if she didn't want to remain in contact? The same sort of contact we'd been having. She didn't tell the cops that. She didn't tell the cops about her previous phone number and communications between us during 2015 at all. And it seems the cops weren't that keen to find out anyway. But why would she do that? And why would she take the risk of telling a pack of lies to the cops? If convicted, I'd be shamed and put on the sex offenders register, which was probably the goal of the monsters who arranged this. That would be enough to ruin me. Dunlop has said as much to me in writing via Andrew Smith. But Emma Clark? She'd go to jail if convicted of setting me up by fabricating a false sequence of messages and images. High stakes. I assume she was being supported and encouraged in her lies. I don't know that yet, but I'll find out. Living her best life. I'm told that's what it says in her social media profile. We'll see. This is some of the detail of my exchanges with Emma Clark. Not all. I've got plenty more in reserve. But I'll tell you this. Being prepared to lie to the police makes Emma Clark a dangerous person. To be clear, I've never had a physical relationship with Emma Clark at all. It was Emma Clark who initiated the explicit sexual communications and casual exchanges of sexual images, video, and other communications with me in June 2015. I've now recovered some of the previous deleted material. I've also got other records which prove lots of other details, some of which I'm going to detail now. There's also some eyewitness evidence. These exchanges continued for periods of time and stopped completely for periods of time. Between June 2015 and July 2016, there were breaks from August to December 2015 and from March to May 2016. From June 2015 until mid-February 2016, Emma Clark's mobile number ended in 745. She didn't tell the cops about that. The messaging began when she iMessaged her phone number to me in May 2015, one day when I was sitting as sheriff in Selkirk Sheriff Court when she was the clerk. I offered to let her use my parking space in Edinburgh and she said she was going to be working there. She said she couldn't get a space in the car park at Edinburgh Sheriff Court. I've no idea if that was true. At that time in 2015, she used iMessage to send sexually explicit texts, images, videos and other communications to me from this number during 2015 and early 2016. This is important. It leaves a detailed trail of evidence. I've got numerous calls, messages and other detailed entries on my mobile phone documentation in relation to Emma Clark's number ending 745. It doesn't give the detail of the messages, but it shows that there was regular, lengthy communication outside of work. In early 2016, Emma Clark changed her mobile number to one ending 279. From about late December 2015, Emma Clark began to communicate with me via WhatsApp messages, images, videos and other communications sent by that medium. I don't know why she started using WhatsApp. WhatsApp messages are end-to-end encrypted. This is to ensure privacy of communications, but it also gives rise to forensic problems associated with unilateral alteration by deletion from and addition to message sequences. WhatsApp messages cannot be retrieved once deleted. It's different if it's a group chat, because then there's a record of a broader conversation. The important point is that WhatsApp message records can be unilaterally altered. If there are only two people in the conversation and one of them has deleted the conversation record, there is no way to ensure that the remaining record is a true and accurate record of the whole exchanges that took place. There's quite a lot of expert advice out there about the questionable integrity of WhatsApp messages from one source only in the absence of backup on a secure server or medium. You can find such expert views available on the internet. Emma Clark regularly repeated the phrase, quotes, "I know things." On the 24th of June 2015, Emma Clark sent me a naked image of herself. This was the first explicit image sent. This and others referred to will be detailed in her phone records from that time. I received this image at home during the evening, completely by surprise. I hadn't consented to receiving this image in advance. Emma Clark messaged that she'd been out running with a friend and was going for a shower. She messaged that she thought I might like to see her photo. The image showed Emma Clark from behind, taking a selfie from over her right shoulder. She's shown looking into the mirror behind her and holding her iPhone in her left hand. Her face is clearly visible and recognisable. I'm confident that I'll be able to recover a copy of this image following its original agreed deletion. I can also corroborate this with evidence from another person. Subsequently, Emma Clark told me that she'd sent the same image to her friend she'd been out running with. That friend is a local male solicitor. On a separate other occasion, on the 8th of July 2015, at about 7:20 a.m., I received a short video clip by iMessage from Emma Clark. An iMessage was attached which read, quotes, enjoy. I was on my way, driving, to work in Falkirk Sheriff Court. I stopped my car and phoned Emma Clark to discuss the explicit video clip which she'd sent. She later told me she'd sent the same video clip to the same male solicitor as before. I can corroborate this. Emma Clark suggested to me that we should meet on the 9th of July 2015 at the Premier Inn, Balcarres Street, Glasgow. She said she was attending a course at Glasgow Sheriff Court on the 9th and 10th of July 2015. I was staying and working in Glasgow anyway on 9th to 10th of July 2015. These dates are again verifiable in the Scottish Court's training event logs. I was sitting in Glasgow Sheriff Court on the 10th of July 2015. Emma Clark didn't appear to be there. Eventually, she replied to iMessages and said that she was meeting a friend in Glasgow and would be at the Premier Inn later. Her friend, she told me, was a male solicitor. She returned to the Premier Inn later that evening. At about 8:30pm, Emma Clark came to my room where we chatted and enjoyed a couple of glasses of wine. At about 11pm, she left. Her own room was across the corridor from mine. These details are verifiable. She popped into my room at about 8:30am on the 10th of July 2015. She was ready to leave for her training course at Glasgow Sheriff Court. I was sitting in Glasgow Sheriff Court that day. I can produce Premier Inn receipts and phone documentation. On the 16th of July 2015, I met Emma Clark for a coffee at Melville Inn, Midlothian, at about 4pm. It was her suggestion. I was travelling home from working in West Central Scotland. She'd been working in Edinburgh Sheriff Court. She phoned me and suggested that we should meet for a coffee on my way home. We met two people whom I knew in the Melville Inn as we were leaving together. Both of them recognised me and we had a brief chat. Emma Clark committed to give these and many other important and relevant details about our relationship and arrangement to the police in August 2022, if that's when she spoke to the police. I can only go on what they told me. Emma Clark lied to the police to set me up. No doubt about that. In or about January 2016, Emma Clark sent me, without prior warning or agreement, a photo of herself dressed in lingerie. She told me that she'd sent the same image to Graham Clark, her now husband. I'm confident that I'll be able to recover that photo. It shows her face. She sent several other sexual images and messages to me by WhatsApp between January and July 2016. My phone records demonstrate text messaging by iMessage exchanged with Emma Clark on the following dates in 2015. 2nd, 3rd, 4th and 5th. 16th, 17th, 21st, 24th and 25th of June 2015. And 1st, 3rd, 6th, 7th, 9th, 10th, 14th, 15th, 17th, 20th, 21st, 22nd and 25th July 2015. We also exchanged messages by iMessage on 22nd November 2015, and on numerous other dates in 2015. I've recovered some of these. On 5 occasions, Emma Clark sent me images of intimate sexual acts in the morning. This was in about late June to July of 2015, and between May to the end of July 2016. These images usually arrived about 7 to 7:30am, while I was getting showered and ready for work. These images were always deleted, as I had agreed to do. I also spoke on the phone and or exchanged text messages by iMessage with Emma Clark on the following dates in 2015. 4th, 16th and 30th of June 2015 and 4th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 10th, 12th, 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 19th and 24th July 2015. I have the detailed records. In addition to the contact already referred to, I spoke on the phone to Emma Clark on at least the following dates in 2016. 8th, 23rd, 26th and 29th January. 1st, 2nd, 11th February. 12th of May on Emma Clark's new number ending 279. 7th, 8th and 14th July and on other occasions. We also exchanged numerous and regular messages by WhatsApp. These have been deleted by me as agreed and can't be recovered. On 7th of July 2016, I spoke to Emma Clark for 17 minutes and 36 seconds by phone. On 8th of July 2016, I spoke to Emma Clark for 37 minutes and 1 second by phone. On 18th July 2016, I spoke to Emma Clark for 18 minutes and 36 seconds by phone. In addition, there were numerous WhatsApp exchanges until the end of July 2016. On the 2nd of July 2016, Emma Clark and I went together to Harvey Nichols' store, St Andrew Square, Edinburgh. She asked me to buy her a handbag. We met at the store at about 10 a.m. It was a Saturday morning. Emma Clark brought her son with her in a pushchair. We went together upstairs to the department in which designer handbags are sold. Emma Clark chose a Coach handbag, I think. I bought the handbag and I paid £375 for it. I used HSBC Visa business debit card in my own name to make the purchase. My HSBC business bank account was debited by Harvey Nichols in the sum of £375 on the 4th of July 2016. I can produce a copy of this HSBC bank statement for August 2016 showing the relevant debit entry on 4th July 2016. I gave the handbag to Emma Clark. The following month, during the afternoon on 4th of August 2016, Emma Clark contacted me by WhatsApp message. She asked me to pick up a pair of shoes for her from Harvey Nichols' store in St Andrew's Square, Edinburgh. She said that she was going to a function and wanted new shoes. She told me she was going to the function with Graham Clark, her now husband. She explained that Jim Cruikshank, the court officer at Selkirk Sheriff Court at the time, was supposed to travel to Edinburgh to pick the shoes up for her, but was now unable to do so. She explained that the shoes she wanted were designer shoes made by Christian Louboutin. She explained that the shoes had trademark red soles. I was working in Edinburgh, and so I was happy to collect her shoes. I went to Harvey Nichols' store and to the department which sold designer shoes. I sent Emma Clark photos by WhatsApp of the shoe display so that she could choose the Christian Louboutin shoes she wanted. Once she had chosen, I bought the Christian Louboutin shoes. I used my Halifax Ultimate Reward Bank Visa card to make the purchase in the sum of £645.05. The sum of £645.05 was debited from Halifax Ultimate Reward account on the 5th of August 2016. I arranged to meet Emma Clark at Newton Grange Railway Station during the late afternoon on 4th August 2016. We met where she had already parked on or next to a green electric car parking space next to the platform entrance at Newton Grange Railway Station. I handed the shoes over to Emma Clark. I told her she didn't need to give me the money for the shoes. So there was lots of contact between Emma Clark and me, and there's lots of evidence of it. For her to go to the cops and allege that I bombarded her with explicit images and messages which she didn't consent to is just malicious lies. I did not send any images or explicit images to Emma Clark on the 9th and 10th of August 2016. It's an offence to set someone up in this manner. It's called perverting the course of justice. I suspect, but I don't know yet for sure, that someone has put her up to this. I'm keen to see the details of who is involved in this. No one is above the law.